Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 93 of the Peak Israeli podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson. And as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking about time walking, Legion time walking, Mage Tower stuff mostly. And joining us to do that, we have recently anointed counselor Bruce Stepp. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Bruce Stepp. You can also call me Sage, either or. I am a longtime player WoW. Been playing since early vanilla. Started raiding. I raided in every expansion, but started seriously raiding in Legion until Shadowlands came out and I got my first CE at that point. And I've been an achievement hunter, at least in current content. Sometimes old content just, it's hard without other players there. It's boring and lonely. But achievement hunter, transmog hunter. I love the outdoor stuff until I'm done with it and then I couldn't do it anymore. Once I'm done, I'm not going back.
Nice.
Yep.
Very cool. Very cool.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, awesome. No, definitely. Thanks for turning up. At least on time. Emilson was not on time. He forgot his camera. So his fault.
All right. That's I was awesome. All ready to go. And then I went to turn on the video and the button was grayed out because there was no camera attached to my computer. And I went, oh no.
Oh, I had a similar issue. My USB hub that my camera was on died. So, I did it more than 5 minutes in advance, so I figured that out.
Yeah, my camera stays on this computer pretty much all the time. But I moved it to my other computer for a work thing on Friday and never moved it back.
Unbelievable. Awesome. Exactly. So
before we get into Mage Tower stuff, is there any stuff from this week we want to go over? Or the past 2 weeks, if we didn't have an episode last week?
Yeah. So sorry about last week. I was, of course, it's always me the way we don't have episodes because I have a family that likes to take my time away from doing things like this. Freaking ridiculous. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, we had a couple of things. So I think the big thing that happened over the past 2 weeks that most people probably care about is they did do a tuning pass on the Brewmaster and Mistweaver tier sets. For 9.2. So I'll go over the Mistweaver one real quick. And then I think, which is really not that big a deal. And then we can go through the Brewmaster one. So the biggest deal that happened is they named the set. It is called the Garb of the Grand Upwelling, which Upwelling is a terrible talent. It's also a terrible name to name a set, but we do have a name for the set now. And also they added in that on the two-piece, the residual healing effect of Essence Font has been increased by 5%, along with the additional 2 seconds of the hot. So essentially the hot healing is now 5% stronger. Emil, if you can help me out here, what is 5% of zero?
I think that's still zero.
Still zero, yeah. So minor at best type change. We have a little bit more healing on the hot. So they're looking at things, which is cool. But this, I mean, the two-piece is still super lackluster in terms of power. All the power is still in the four-piece, which is still the same. Other than the only other thing we learned about the four-piece, which wasn't in the patch notes, but first of all, massive circle. I don't think we knew at the time last time we spoke, but it's a 10-yard radius. So, you
it's
know,
huge.
It's massive. It's also the graphic for, I don't know if you remember Grand Magister Elison in Nighthold.
Yeah.
But it's the graphic for the puddle she used to put on the ground you had to soak, like the starting graphic. Yeah. It's ridiculously annoying. They have to tone it down, at least for the monk in question, because use it a couple times, you can't see ground effects. Like you're just, you're screwed. But the cool thing is it's a massive circle, so.
We did PTR testing in the monk in our group, the Mistweaver in our group. just spent the first half of the first PTR, the Zymox test, just trying to figure out what that graphic was. What is this spell effect? What is this mechanic? Where is this in the journal? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Reminded me of Ashara too.
Oh, yep. Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Gave me PTSD when I saw it for the first time.
I saw it in Orbos, and I figured it was someone's toy that they were like, they had done, you know, the normal Tauren shenanigans of like using all the giant potions, and it was just a regular size, like, mage thing, and they had, you know, just gotten giant and like, oh, look at this giant animation. But no, that's actually just the regular size of it. It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, good news, it is a big circle. You can move around. I think a lot of people were concerned about using it and then have to move in melee or have to move out of it, but it's 10 yard radius, you know, 20 yards across. It's massive. Like, you shouldn't ever use it and then move out of it in those 10 seconds, which is cool. But yeah, the updates to the tier set, though, the two piece is just like, whatever, like 2 or 5% more healing on a hot that does limited healing anyway. So, but I think the bigger news might have been the Brewmaster set. So you guys got an actual new set bonus, right?
Yes, they completely replaced our 4-piece. Please stop talking about the 2-piece bonus. The 2-piece bonus is fine. But the 4-piece bonus was not. It was really bad. It was basically not. It basically was like, it's like if they put 4-piece bonus and there just wasn't any text after it. That's what it was. What it is now, Keg Smash does 50% more damage, heals you for 100% of damage dealt, and gives you... Fuck, I gotta hold up now.
It's 66% of the damage dealt, and then grants you 66% of the damage dealt.
Healing as max HP. Currently, there is no cap on the max HP you can get, and you can refresh it. So, you can get very large health values.
That's going to make some juicy touches.
Yeah, you can use it in AoE. Panini has a screenshot of his health bar being 315k HP.
We're back in Legion hitting, now.
Yeah, from hitting Keg Smash on the AoE testing dummies in one of the order halls.
So
that was fun.
So the oh, because it's of the damage dealt. So if it hits multiple targets, it deals more damage. Gotcha.
Imagine Jesus. That in when you have like the old raid scaling and you keg smash for a billion damage. Old raid.
That'd be pretty good. That's crazy. But keg smash's cooldown is it? Well, it's less than 10 seconds anyway, right? Like just the base cooldown.
It's the base cooldown is about 7 seconds. I think it's either 8 seconds or 7 seconds. And then with the amount of haste you'll have, it'll be 6 to 7 seconds long. And I don't remember the stacking behavior offhand. I believe you can just refresh it, but it doesn't stack the HP. Because like in raid testing, I wasn't actually getting a bajillion HP off of it. I was getting a reasonable amount, but we were testing mostly single target stuff. So
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I could not notice the set bonus at all on heroic testing, to be honest. The stuff just didn't do enough damage that the healing was noticeable. The max HP didn't really matter. And I mean, to notice the damage, I would have needed to pull up a log, basically.
Right. Yeah.
But interesting. I mean, numerically, it's good. In practice, it's kind of boring, but it will have interactions that will make it interesting, I think. Because of specifically like Bruce Depp referenced Touch of Death. You know, imagine setting up on something like Soul Render. You know, you throw a Keg Smash on the ads while they have 100% increased damage taken. You know,
I'm gonna ruin all my Windwalker parses with your Touch of Death stealing.
Get the nice, you know, casual 200k HP and then hit Touch of Death on something. And that kind of setup and payoff is really cool. Moment to moment rotational gameplay, not so much, but having that kind of, you know, bonus is okay. I'm happy with this.
Awesome. Well, that's good. I mean, I know that last week we talked about or 2 weeks ago we talked about the other 4-piece, and it was just like, you already have unlimited shuffle duration. So like, what is the point of this? What is the point of giving you more duration for something that's always up? So no, that's cool. So I'm glad. I mean, glad Brews are happy, at least with them.
Yeah. No changes to the Windwalker set, right?
No, not that I saw.
Okay. Just still
a micromanaging game,
Yeah.
Does the Brewmaster buff stack with Storm Stouts? Like when you do two in a row?
Yes.
Awesome. That's going to be crazy.
So it stacks with the damage increase from Storm Stouts. It also benefits from the damage increase from Kyrian, a Weapons of Order, and from the Conduit that increases Archaic Smash damage against targets that have Breath of Fire active on them. So there's actually a bunch of different multipliers that haven't really mattered because we didn't have anything that specifically cared about Kex Smash, but now that we do, it all those start those pieces start fitting together.
It
will probably mean that our default legendary, our default legendary is basically Storm Stout's last keg, pretty much always right now. Shard Passions is a solid choice for raid, and there's Mighty Poor for high keys. But Shard Passions is currently like 1,000 DPS ahead of Storm Stouts. It's just like, if you play perfectly, it's 1,000 DPS, and if you don't, it's probably a DPS loss. This is going to mean that they're going to be like about equal in DPS, and like if they're about equal, just play the easier one.
Interesting. Well, a little bit of a shake. I like that. I see, this is what I think Tier Switch should do, is like do a little bit of a shakeup, you know, or at least make something, do like something interesting with ability, even if it's for a tier. So, so cool.
Yeah.
All right. I guess the only other thing that happened over the past 2 weeks that we wanted to touch on, other than sort of the Mage Tower stuff, right, is there was a little bit of raid testing done. I think what, 4 bosses were tested total on Heroic over the past 2 weeks. Which I think we were commenting right before we started, but it seems very early for this to occur in terms of just like the patch cycle. Typically raid testing is, I feel like it's more like week three, four in the patch, right?
We actually, this is highly unusual. We got raid testing before the zone was available, like the open world zone was available to test. The first of the raid testing, you actually could not go to Xerath Mortis.
Yeah. So it's super early. I don't think we're going to go too much into it, at least on this episode, because we have some other stuff to talk about. But I know, Emelson, you were able to do, I think, all 4 bosses. And I guess high-level, 30,000-foot view of the world, how are they looking in terms of fight?
I think it looks good so far. Zymox seems like... Actually, so my quick impression of Zymox is that they took Zymox from Castle Nathria, and they learned all of the lessons about what went wrong with the push timers on that fight. And they took those lessons and they made it's a different boss. It's not just a rehash of Zymox from Castle Nathria, but it is something that has percent based push timers that also doesn't seem like it's going to screw you over for pushing too quickly,
which
is cool. I'm hoping to see, like, I'm okay with them doing the percent based push timers if they don't screw you over for going too fast. So, on the whole, like, we tested, what was it, Zymox, Laihuvim, Dasegne, I don't know how to say that, and Skolex, and they're all pretty good. They're mostly early bosses. There's definitely some major bugs. Like, Skolex, you could get to burrow outside of his combat area. He would still do mechanics. There's no real point that I can see to it, but I have a feeling you could probably get him to burrow far enough away that he would just like bug out and stop doing anything at all. So that was fun. But other than that, like it's pretty good. Pretty good. I think we'll be talking more detail about PTR testing maybe next episode, maybe the one after. Depends on when more testing happens.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I feel for me, it's just is always awful because like the timing just sucks. It's just always at the end of my day and like my work day, and it's just like trying to get free for that to also do raid testing is just awful. So I generally like always miss it, but yeah, I've been watching a little bit of the videos. The Zymox one looks cool. I mean, the traps are still there and like the port stuff still looks fun, which I still think is one of the cooler mechanics, right? Like that was cool. Even like when they did it with Rostakan back in, Battlezart BOD, like that was just a cool like portal play. So I'm always a fan of mechanics that like players that interact with the encounter, but players get to influence like where they specifically go. So plus it's an easy way to blame people you raid with for being idiots. So always a good time to call somebody out on that. So
it's always so during the middle of my work day. Can't ever really do it that often.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I get why they do it, because I guess the developers also have it, but they have to watch it and they also have to work. But yeah, it's always a little rough. If it was like 2 hours earlier, I could actually make it work, which is funny enough, or like 2 hours later, like at the end of the yep. West Coast workday. Yeah. But that time is just like real bad. So
yeah, it's 4 to 6 p.m. for me, which is like at the end of my workday. Basically, I basically stop work an hour early and to go do PCR testing. It's actually slightly awkward on Friday, because basically when they do testing on Friday, which they did one of these testing days, I did 2 hours of PTR testing, had a 2 hour break, and then 4 hours of main raid. So that was a lot of raiding in one day.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that for you. Yeah. That is a buttload of raiding there. Boatload of raiding. So, well, cool. Hey, well, oh, sorry.
No, I can't raid with my friends that long. In one single day.
Yeah.
I like the bosses. I don't think there's one that stood out to me as really like, I didn't, you know, I hated this boss. There's no, like, yeah, I don't know. There's not a Fate Scribe kind of boss that we tested that I'm like, this is going to absolutely suck when it goes live, which is good.
That'd be awesome, yeah. And I hope they actually push through and don't test the last three. I hope they actually can make that happen. Like,
oh man, that's going to be wild if they do. I cannot wait.
And I'll be honest with you, like, if you look at least their track record this expansion, like Denathrius and Sylvanas didn't have like game breaking bugs. Like they had a couple like oversights in terms of like strat things, but like,
yeah.
To be fair, those oversights
not changes. Did Denathrius do any changes during the world first race?
I think they changed a couple things with the ads in P2. But
yeah,
like,
they...
Sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, what were you gonna say? I don't know exactly what they changed, so
I was watching it intently. I remember they added it in a rage after Echo decided to send only Now on the left side and 19 other people on the right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sylvanas did that, but yeah, I forget on Denathrius if they did anything, but no, you're right. I mean, the last bosses have been really good, so I think I'm less concerned about that. It's like the bosses right before them, with both Stone Legion and KT being the the penultimate boss in the last two raids. So
yeah,
but no, it might be cool if they do that. It'd be cool to see those guys get to that, you know, without any prior knowledge other than Dungeon Journal stuff. So
yeah,
But cool. So I think next. So any other topics over the last couple of weeks before we jump into the main topic for today?
Not really. Not that I'm aware of. Main topic then. Legion Time Walking started this past week. It was slated to be 2 weeks long. And there's two main pieces to this time walking that most people care about. There's the Mage Tower, and there's Time Walking Mythic Plus. The Mage Tower, they've already announced, is going to be extended to be a month long. I don't know if that also includes the Time Walking Mythic Plus. I'm hopeful, because I really actually kind of missed the Legion keys. They're a lot of fun. Show their age.
They do show their age, but there are a lot of cool dungeons that I miss doing there. And I'm kind of sad that like Blackrook Cold was picked over. Like, I don't know. I liked Seat of the Triumvirate a lot.
Okay.
Things like that.
You are no longer welcome on this podcast.
But that was a Windwalker thing.
Yeah. Was it just like being able to like roll Dragon Punch now. Stuff?
No, that was a world of legendary switching, right? You would be able to switch for the last boss to do mega damage with the Touch of Death gloves twice. Okay. You'd be able to double dip the 200% damage bonus with Touch of Death on the first boss. That's how Windwalker Touch of Death worked in Legion. You would double dip huge damage bonuses like that. You get a lot of cool stuff like that. Not really looking forward to pushing Darkheart Thicket without a Prydaz, you know, as a Windwalker nowadays.
Yep, Xavius is going to be rough.
Especially without being able to switch to stuff like that. That was like a key part of pushing high back in the day, was switching to Prydaz for the last boss when you had no way to soak two back-to-back bolts or whatever it was.
Right.
But I do hope that they keep it around for at least two weeks every cycle, so you get a tyrannical and a fortified infernal every Legion time walking.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to do tyrannical every time. Yeah, I want to experience both.
Currently, so for reference, it is currently tyrannical. One thing, so I don't think we're gonna spend too much time on Legion Mythic Boss, maybe we will. I don't know. But all the bosses, despite being tyrannical, have very reasonable health pools. I hadn't really noticed that. Like, you do a tyrannical key in Shadowlands, and I swear the bosses are like twice as long on tyrannical as the bosses are in Legion. And I don't know if that's just a time walking scaling thing or what, but I like the shorter bosses.
Me too. I think that's just the way they were designed, and it's they kind of just scaled it up as is. I hope that they take that going forward and realize that they should apply that to all mythic minions.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's the same tyrannical though. Like, they changed tyrannical for Shadowlands, right? Or whatever. And I don't know if it's the same tyrannical or if it's the Legion tyrannical.
That's true. I have a feeling it's the same tyrannical, but I don't know for sure. But it feels like the tyrannical Legion bosses, like, you get to see their, you get like through one to two rotations of their mechanics, and then they're dead with Bloodlust. And that feels like the right length, as opposed to like Bloodlusting on half the bosses in Shadowlands, and you go through four cycles on like a tyrannical 15 or 16. And it depends on the DPS, but I was doing it with we shall say trash alts in my guild last night, and it was fine. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like something that most people that I've talked to have really, really enjoyed, or, you know, have thought it's been fun when they've done it. So yeah, hopefully this is sort of the idea of something they'll keep around. And I agree, yeah, the 2 week keeping Legion time walking around for 2 weeks every cycle, I think makes sense, just so you can do both sides of the, or see both sides of sort of the Mythic Plus, you know, meta at that point, or whatever it ends up being, right? The two different challenges sides of it. So
yeah. I'm still in favor of them just keeping it, like, give me an entire season of Legion plus Shadowlands Mythic Plus.
Just like the Great Push.
Yeah.
Like, and MDI and stuff or whatever. Like, they added Eye of Ashar and all that good stuff to the Great Push, which is going on.
That's true. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, they keep it alive. Yeah, I mean, there's some of the stuff, the time walking just as a concept sometimes is always a little bit weird. Like, I get why they do it. Like, it's different event-based stuff, but like some of the stuff, it'd be cool if it was just always around. Like, the Mage Shard feels like something that, I know we're going to talk about it in a minute, but it feels like something that should just always be there and not based on like some sort of time-gated thing, because there's nothing inherent, like, you don't gain anything from doing this other than some cosmetics, right? Like, there's nothing like holding, I don't know, that you'd want to like min-max around getting it. You actually don't even get currency for it too. So you couldn't even, like, if they release new like time walking rewards, you couldn't just bottle or bank a bunch of currency to like buy that stuff the first day it came out. So
yeah.
Not that anybody cares about time walking rewards, but
the time walking element of the Mythic Plus stuff also means that they really do need to like gut every single trinket or item that ends up being super good. We've already seen some of that. Writhing Heart of Darkness from Dark Heart Thicket got gutted before release. The Quarter Stars auto attack ring got nerfed substantially. I think it's still good for a couple specs, but it got nerfed a lot. Stuff like that, that if it were available for a whole season, it would be fine, because you could just get it that season, and, you know, the next season when the eye level bump happens, it's probably not worth it anymore. Maybe it's like slightly better than a higher eye level thing, but not by enough that it's a big deal.
If they would have brought Lower Karazhan back, I would my healers would be making me farm for Drape of Shame all day, every day of that week.
Yeah. Bring Karazhan back. That's,
forgot about that.
The Karazhan dungeons were fun.
Those, like, the mega dungeons in general, I feel like, have always been really fun, but I think we're going to live on, that's a little bit of a tangent statement, so we won't go too far into that. But yeah.
Yeah.
I think the next Legion time walking is slated in the in-game calendar for like March 2022.
It's far away.
Yeah. That's just too long for something that seems so popular.
So I understand.
And it's going to hit every season.
Yeah.
There's going to be, so there's this concept when you're talking multiplayer games of like queue starvation. If you have too many different queues for people to go into, then there's not going to be enough, like most queues will not have enough people to actually fire. So you know, to reference like Magic Arena has this at times where there's like four or five different queues, like for each format, and then there's four different formats and all this stuff. So sometimes some of the queues you just end up waiting for like 10 minutes to get a game. Actually, it's not that bad. They've got a bajillion players now, so it's not that bad. It was during the beta, but it's not bad with now. But the Legion, like the different Mythic Plus stuff, doesn't really compete with each other, right? It's like I would be very happy if they just like gave us the Legion time walking just as extra, like it's an extra set of dungeons. Instead of doing the 8 Shadowlands dungeons, we can have the 8 Shadowlands dungeons plus 8 Legion time walking dungeons, and just it's twice as much dungeons.
The feeling that I get, at least this is the engineer in me coming out, but the feeling I get is they didn't want to commit to 8 dungeons full time yet.
Yeah, I think
they wanted to see the work involved and the interest and the persistent interest and what the actual ROI would be.
They are, and I can definitely understand that in part because, well, for one thing, I don't push keys. I'm doing my weeklies kind of thing. But the Legion time walking keys are definitely tuned differently in a way that would negatively impact like pushing high keys. Because there are still a bunch of like rippy one shots, even if you're just doing a 15. And those are going to get so much worse if you go higher. So, and they've largely removed those kind of one shots until you get to very, very high keys in Shadowlands dungeons. So.
Don't bring back BFA dungeons. That's all I'm going to say.
I actually think they're fine. Back. Like, okay, they can skip King's Rest and Shrine of the Storms. Those two can stay out. You know, if they're picking some of them, but, you know, Underrot's fun. The first boss sucks, but Underrot's fun. Freehold, of course, a blast. What? Underrot's fun.
I didn't like Underrot that much. It was kind of a gimmicky route dungeon.
There's two problems with Underrot, okay? There's the first boss, and there's the trash after the third boss. Where you like are trying to skip all the worms and things. Those worms suck. I would be happy if they brought back like some of the BFA dungeons. You know, they can give us a Talazar and Freehold and Underrot, and you know, they can leave off Siege of Boral. They can give us like three. We can get a microcosm of BFA Mythic Plus, and they can
What was the one in Dressar? The
Waycrest Manor.
That one, Waycrest Manor can come back too. That one was, they fixed all the pulling through wall shit by the end of the expansion.
But the view, like the view in that dungeon was awful. Like the camera work to like make it so you weren't just staring at a wall 24/7 is just no.
Yeah,
I hate that place.
Okay, that's fair.
I hate that place.
Toldegore can stay gone. That one.
That's yes. Agreed. The prison. Ugh.
Yeah,
love wiping the mobs getting stuck in the wall as you use the cannons to like kill them. That was always my favorite. It was like the permanent combat, and then just getting ported and dying was always fun.
Yes,
I don't like cannons and that kind of stuff in dungeons. Kind of,
yeah,
I agree.
It was like Plague
one.
Borers and Plaguefall. Like, I'm sitting on my cooldowns for 10 minutes, not doing anything,
and then you pull 3/4 of the dungeon into the cannons, kill it all with those, and if you screw it up, the key's dead.
Exactly. But maybe enough about terrible BFA dungeons.
We did get sidetracked.
Yeah, we could talk a little bit about maybe some of the Mage Tower stuff. So we'll start there, I think. And so I guess to give a little bit of background for people who might not realize, Mage Tower was a piece of solo content that was released back in Legion. So in this case, it's timing up with Legion Time Walking. And Blizzard is essentially bringing it back. At the time, it was supposed to be a very difficult, like, solo piece of content that you did. And your reward was essentially just a cosmetic for your artifact weapon at that point. They've essentially brought back those exact encounters. The encounters were, they were spec and class specific. So I think there was 7 total encounters. And the specs, your spec and class, or your class and spec basically did one or another, one of those 7, essentially.
And they also, there's only 7, but they each has tweaks for different specs most of the time.
That's true.
So for example, all the tank specs have the same encounter, but it varies in subtle ways from or sometimes not so subtle ways from tank to tank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. So and then yeah, the reward at that point was an artifact skin. So it was a very special skin for your artifact weapon. Now it's essentially a recolor of the armor set from Tomb of Sargeras. Sorry, I couldn't think
of which were themselves recolors of tier sets from the Burning Crusade.
Yes.
Or updates of them, because they have like the 3D bits and much higher poly counts.
Exactly. So yeah, so it's essentially a solo piece of content. It's supposed to be very hard for your spec and class. And the idea is you go through essentially a solo scenario and complete it based on what it's asking you to do. I will tell you, back in Legion when I did it, it was one of the best things I'd done in WoW outside of raiding in probably forever.
Agreed.
Since learning how the game worked, or maybe like messing around in Classic with my friends, right? It was just it's a fun thing to do on your own. I will tell you, it was slightly annoying because back then you had to farm a currency, and that currency you needed to use to unlock keys to do the stuff. But no, it was fun back then. And I will tell you, well, I have not completed the Mistweaver one. I have about 4 pulls in it because there was a Diablo 3 season. But it's been fun. It's literally the exact same thing. I think the biggest difference is your class is slightly different than it was back in Legion, but the encounter felt the same way, at least the Mistweaver one. It's been fun doing it, at least initially. And it's been, I think a lot of people have had fun doing it, even just from what I've seen and talked to. So I don't know.
Before we get into specifics of encounters, I think a lot of people have like a warped perception of the difficulty of the Mage Tower.
Yeah,
because they did it with Tomb of Sargeras or Antorus gear.
The Mage Tower, you could outgear it in Legion
during Nighthold. And doing it with,
it was hard.
Yeah, doing it with heroic Nighthold gear was pretty hard. Like, so I started working on my monk at like eye level 890, which is somewhere between heroic Emerald Nightmare and heroic Nighthold gear levels. And I think I finished it when I was at like 903 or 904. Tomb of Sargeras gear, for reference, was, I think heroic was like 915 or 920, something like that. I forgot about Titan Forging. So Titan Forging warps all those numbers. I have no idea what any of them mean anymore. But yeah, your gear did matter there, because your regular gear just like worked. The Mage Tower this time around, all your gear gets scaled down to eye level 50. You are scaled down to level 45. You keep all of your higher level abilities and things, but Covenants, Legendaries, Conduits, Azerite stuff from BFA, Legion Artifacts, Legion Legendaries, none of that stuff works. And they have been systematically squashing a bunch of time walking stuff that scales weirdly, which I know some people are not happy about, because it wrecks the like builds people would use for just regular old time walking dungeons to just like go into a time walking dungeon and be an actual god.
Yeah. That I think that's been the interesting part, I'd say, like the hot fixes, right? So yeah, I think you're right, Emelson. I think a lot of people forget that back then, like, it was not a 4-pull thing and you did it. Like, I remember on my monk when I did it in probably mythic level Nighthold gear, it took me probably like 40 or 50 attempts, right? Yeah. Like, it was not a like walk in there, work on it for an hour, get it done. And I saw somebody today was like, oh man, finally over. I did it in 5 hours. It was so hard. I'm like, spent twice that when it originally came out. Like,
yeah. I probably spent 200 pulls doing it on Brewmaster the first time.
Well, the Brewmaster one was notoriously harder, I think.
I'll talk more about the Brewmaster one now in a bit. Yeah. But yeah, they were hard. They were a lot of fun. I actually do think that in my case specifically, the currency did some good because it meant I couldn't just blast the Mage Tower over and over again for 3 days straight. So it forced me to take breaks.
I definitely lost a couple of like the keys just from dying to something stupid, going right back in there, and then dying in phase one to something even stupider. Just be like, okay, I need to step back. Like I'm getting a little tilted here now. But no, I mean, it's been. Sage, go.
I did the Windwalker one the day it came out in Legion, and that took me a good three and a half hours without any guides. But
yeah,
the Mistweaver and the Brewmaster ones I did at the end of Antorus, and it was way easier when you outgeared it.
Both of them have damage checks or throughput checks, I guess I should say, because Mistweaver. But both of them have throughput checks, and they did get significantly easier. The Brewmaster one in particular still has it's got all the knockback stuff that you can't outgear. No amount of gear is going to keep you from getting knocked off the platform by an Infernal.
I think that's been the one thing that's been funny to me, and I mean Blizzard made a post on this about they're looking at the scaling, and they've made a couple of scaling adjustments. I made a couple of changes to the way the encounters work even now. I think that's the one thing people the general community might not remember just how difficult it was to do the stuff back in Legion when it came out. So it's been very positive, and I think so positive that you mentioned Emerson Blizzard is extending at least Mage Tower. Is it all of Legion Time Walking, or is it just the Mage Tower by an additional 2 weeks?
They just said Mage Tower, but I'm not sure how that works if it's tied to the Time Walking event.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. I'm hoping it includes the rest of the Time Walking stuff, but maybe it doesn't. At the least, it's going to be the Mage Tower. And part of the reason they're doing it is because of the changes that they've had to make. Had to use a strong word. But so one of the things that's different this time around, obviously we lost all the borrowed power from Legion, but they tuned it in a way that it makes sense. Like, since our gear is scaled and everything, they have a very narrow band of player power to tune things around. And there are items and there are enchants like the Crusader enchant that kind of cheese that, but by and large, they have a narrow band that they can tune around. So the encounters are pretty tightly tuned. What is different is actually just the base classes. And some of them are more different than others.
Yeah.
So things like Protection Paladin had the HP of their encounter nerfed. In part just because the class does less damage than it did in Legion relative to, the other tank specs. Because back in Legion, theirs had 50% more health than the Brewmaster one. And they do not do 50% more damage as a baseline class right now. They do more, but not 50% more. So it was already reduced some, and they reduced it further. Some of it, I think, is deserved nerfs to bring them kind of in line with other challenges. But also, there's a lot of complaining. And the Protection Paladin one, the Bear one, stuff like that, are all perfectly doable as they were before the nerfs. They just would have taken longer. And I think that's really where the time-gatedness of time walking causes problems, because people can't just be like, oh, I'm eventually going to get it. They have to get it within this 2 weeks, or they wait 6 months and then they get it, or 4 months, and then they get another week to spend on it.
Yeah. And I think that's the other problem too, is that I think a lot of the fact that this is sort of a timed event right now, at least it'll come back, but it's timed right now, right? It's just sort of forcing Blizzard's hand and making sure that people can get this done in the week they want to do it. It's just I don't know. I'd rather them. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's the other thing. So I'm thinking as I'm talking, it reminds me of Torghast, which is not the thing you want, but I'll say the changes that I've seen. So I've only really paid attention, to be fair, the Mistweaver sort of scenario or event or whatever we're calling this, Mage Tower Challenge, sorry. And the changes they made are sort of okay, I'd say. They basically made some of the mobs in the first part of the instance less one-shotty, we'll say.
Yeah.
And gave you a little bit more DPS time, which I think is appropriate. I think healer DPS back then was a little bit higher than it is right now, just relatively speaking. But the interesting part too about the Mistweaver specific one is that the last boss is a lot more health for Mistweavers than any other healer spec, which is interesting. So it makes the last boss a little bit, it's definitely a DPS check, more of a DPS check than any other class, right? The other thing too is a lot
like move in and weave attacks between lowering your health and positioning his jumps, and it seems like you have to do that a lot more in a Mistweaver than the rest.
Yeah, you want to stack. So the way the last boss works, if you haven't done it, is like he'll put a debuff on you, like the Nightbane debuff, where when it expires, it does damage based on the amount of missing or amount of total health you have. So you want less health in general, so it does less overall damage. That's one piece. And then he also puts fire patches in the ground. So he'll leap and put a fire patch in the ground. So it's essentially that, and it doesn't go away. So it sort of shortens the amount of room you have to finish the encounter. So it's a little bit, that's how they do the DPS check. But with the health, like there's this weird thing with Mistweaver where you almost want to stack those puddles. And generally speaking, if you stack puddles, you're dying. So like you have to like use your defensive in a way right before he jumps to stack a puddle on top of another puddle. And that way you get more room and hence in turn more time to DPS. So yeah, it's super tight. But like speaking with a couple other people who've done the other healer ones, like the druid, like if you're a resto druid, it's almost not free, but it's like considerably easier. Just in terms of the damage they do and the fact that they're ranged and all their damage is ranged, that sort of helps out a lot of the other stuff. But no, it's I think, yeah, in general, the changes I've seen them make, at least to this healer one, seem okay in terms of just like making it slightly easier, at least slightly less annoying to like if you mess up even for 1 second, you don't wipe, at least with this one, right? In other instances, you might be just done by like missing a kick or missing an interrupt on a mage. Now you have a little bit more time get through it. So
I think so. The Arcane Blitz changed to the first phase of that one. So there's casters, they cast Arcane Blitz. You really don't want them to get those casts off more than once or twice because they get a stacking buff and it'll start just one-shotting people. Apparently, with how they changed that, the mages can sometimes just like naturally lose their stacks because they spend some time not casting it. Which may be a little bit more of a nerf than intended, but yeah. I don't think the first part is really like, it's one of the harder pieces of it, but I don't think that in particular was one of the harder pieces of that part.
Yeah, no, I mean, to be fair, that is really, there's only one wave where that's really an issue, and it's a mage plus two other mobs. And the idea is before those other mobs do some fixate ability, you want to have the mage almost dead or dead because you'll have to run away from the mage. And as a Mistweaver, you can't DPS during that time. So like this helps in terms of number one, you get a little bit more time and can stun a little bit later. But number two, as you do that runaway portion, like the mage won't stack up really high and essentially get like one shot range in terms of its damage then. So
yeah,
a little bit easier there.
I will say I'm glad they're nerfing the weird scaling stuff because it's just a super unintuitive way to outgear the content.
Yeah, I mean,
trivializes it like in weird ways, and I want the challenge to be preserved.
Yeah,
there are things like Umbrella Fury Potion is about as good as the current Phantom Fire Potion, except it lasts twice as long, so it's twice as good. You get, you know, double the value for your potions. And those were selling, they went from like being worthless to being, you know, 3,000 gold apiece on my realm. And
it's crazy.
Just things like that, like the Crusader Enchant is, again, like a kind of infamous one where the healing that you get from it is really, really high because of the weird scaling stuff. But in the process of nerfing this, they're of course nerfing it for every time walking thing. So there's apparently like a community of people that like put together these really like crazy builds where they're using a bunch of random, you know, Burning Crusade gear with triple sockets and meta gems and low level enchants. And bringing that into time walking and actually just like being able to effectively solo it, right, like solo regular five person dungeons in time walking, which I understand having your toys taking away is kind of frustrating, but also I kind of agree with you, Brewstep, about wanting, like, I don't personally care if somebody gets it by cheesing it with a bunch of time walking gear, but I don't want that to be the way that most people feel compelled to approach it because of the time gated nature of the event. Like, if you need to make sure that it, like, if you have the Saturday to spend an afternoon on it every 4 months, then it just makes sense to spend the 4 months in between time walking events putting together one of these sets and trivializing the encounter. I do think ultimately that is something that they have to address, and I think that they might be addressing it the wrong way. I feel like most people wouldn't, because like these sets are not easy to put together.
They take some research, they take some effort. There are, you know, you sometimes have to go do old raids and hope they drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, it's frustrating with the time gated nature of it. And then you have a long downtime period where you have plenty of time to farm all this stuff up. And next time it comes around, it'll be a completely different experience because you're 40 to 50% stronger.
Yeah. I do feel like it is just like the wrong way to solve the problem. I don't think a lot of people are going to go through the effort to put together one of those sets unless they absolutely have to. And if it wasn't a time-gated thing where they felt like, you know, in order to have a chance of getting this in my one afternoon that I've got, you know, I have to put together this set. Like, if it were just more available, which has multiple goods, or multiple good effects, because, like, these are actually just, like, fun things to do, right?
Yeah.
You can go.
You're good.
It's frustrating because it also doesn't really apply to regular time walking either. Like regular time walking, you get all your toys back, presumably. And those are way better at scaling down to regular time walking dungeons than anything you set up for the Mage Tower. It's like a Mage Tower time walking set is its own thing, and it's extremely annoying to farm and not have any use for it at all. And you don't really need to keep the toys anymore after that. Like, you might keep an old tier set before they made them legacy to use them in time walking, or an old legendary and all that stuff. But none of that in Mage Tower. You make this set, you kill it, you're done. The set can be destroyed.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I feel like if it were just always available, if the Mage Tower were just permanently available, then people wouldn't be putting together, like, there would be people putting together sets for it. It is repeatable, so we probably would see people like doing silly things just to push the limits of what they could do in the Mage Tower. But people that just wanted the skins, the transmog from it, wouldn't be putting all of this into the sets.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, the nice part about that being out there, or this stuff being out there, is that while it is convoluted in terms of a way to make the encounters easier, it is a way to make them easier, right? So like the idea is just in the way that most people play games. Like if this was back, I'll say, when WoW first opened, and this is, they had something like this, and the way to beat it was you could cheese it a little bit. Like that information probably a little bit more difficult to find, but like, WoW had a post up 2 weeks ago about things you should start farming for the Mage Tower if you wanted to cheese it, which is just like the information isn't hidden to the way that I think most people play video games nowadays, which is like the minute you generally hit something, you can't figure it out. Like you Google it and there's probably someone who has written something that you could follow. Right. And I think for me, that's sort of the one thing that I don't understand the nerfing of some of the stuff that Blizzard's done, because while it does increase the difficulty, we'll say, of the Mage Tower, which is what the goal of these things is, right? It also, though, ruins, like we've talked about, which is like the knock-on effect is like the time walking general community sort of is now like, scrambling to figure out other ways to do what they did last week, right? Because they nerfed a bunch of stuff this week for something else, right? It's the same idea that when you get like updates to PvE or PvP ability, or get updates based on something that's happening in PvP that then affects PvE like in ways that they didn't realize. It just sort of sucks. And yeah, I think you're right, Emerson. Like if this was sort of an always there thing, they might put a little bit more thought, or even start to put in tech that says like, cool, we really don't want Crusader to be the enchant that makes this trivial. We'll disable Crusader, we'll make Crusader weaker just in Mage Tower. Right, which probably takes a little bit longer to do, but it's something they could do versus like, we have to get this patch out today to just nerf Crusader across the board because we know we can do that without anything additional. So
I also just think, I don't think people would spend 20,000 gold on a Crusader enchant or whatever if the Mage Tower was just always up and they could just keep banging their heads on it until they get it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because time is money, friend, and 20,000 gold is it's a decent chunk of time.
Yeah. Yeah. So anything, I know we're sort of, I guess we're halfway through. Anything else on the Mage Tower stuff at this point?
I wanted to like talk through, I was thinking we could talk through each of the Monk Mage Towers and maybe give other thoughts. We had like, if you've done other classes and specs Mage Tower challenges. I think, Bruce Sepp, you said you'd done the Windwalker one. I've done the Brewmaster one. You've worked on the Mistweaver one and but haven't done it yet.
Not successfully. I'm a slacker.
Yeah. I feel like the Mistweaver one is now the hardest of the three Monk ones.
Probably,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can talk through it. So, I mean, I've gotten to the final boss, right?
But what's different about it from Legion, or like from a strategy level, different from how you approached it in Legion?
There's, to be fair, not much. Like the actual way that you go through it, like most of your abilities are there from Legion that you have today. I think the nice part is we have a little bit more CC. So what is it? The leg sweep is now baseline versus a talent like it was back then.
I've forgotten that
so,
was
yeah.
in Legion, yeah.
Yeah. So like, so now you have paralysis, leg sweep, and ring of peace or song of Qi Ji, whichever one you want to pick in terms of CC options available. So that's still there. They left all the rest periods the same. So after you do the first phase with the waves, you can rest for however long you want, like cooldowns come back up. And then move forward. So that's been good. I will say though that the difficulty somewhat comes from in the middle phases. So like the middle phases have a bunch of eyes that come at you, and the eyes explode when they die, and they also do damage around them if you're in melee. So you basically have to like jump in, hit them real quick, run away, have one explode, heal yourself up, have the next explode, right? And in that regard, your Crackling Jade Lightning does a lot less damage, I'll say, just relatively speaking. Like you used to be able to like hit that a little bit, kill one quickly, then go in and DPS the others. So that's been one slight, I'd say, change there. And then in the final phase, in the healing phase, just the nature of the way that Vivify works is now you have to get Renewing Mist on targets. So like there's a phase where you have to not only heal your party, but also heal ghosts that try and walk slowly to the middle of the arena.
Right.
And used to just be able to like focus one with Vivify. If you focus the far one with Vivify, that would actually heal the other two ghosts just based on proximity. So the old Vivify would just heal your main target plus two random targets. And so you used to be able to target the far one. It would heal the two ghosts that are closer and not touch your party. Now you have to make sure Rem gets out, make sure you get Vivify on everything. And so that section is not difficult, it's maybe slightly more difficult. I think Mistweaver just has generally more healing right now, which is helpful than it did back then. So that phase isn't as hard, but a slight change there. And then the final phase, I think like we talked about briefly, the mob just has a lot of health. So like you still have the same issue of like balancing your health with like the debuff going off. And that's still annoying and for Mistweaver slightly difficult. There's a few things there. Like you of course can dip in the fire. You can also taunt the boss to take a couple melee hits from it. Just to sort of get yourself down, because there is a weird overlap. I haven't hit this yet, but somebody else did, where the boss put up the debuff and the debuff's about to expire without a fire pit or fire patch being down so early on, which just puts you well behind for the start, which is an interesting timing thing. I think Volk might have hit that, or somebody hit that.
There's definitely some weird timing stuff in some of these challenges.
Where it just doesn't line up the way it should, but But no, I mean, I'd say the challenge is largely the same. I'd say it's just, yeah, that sort of I phase used to be pretty simple. And it's a little bit more difficult now that you have to pay attention a little bit. And then, yeah, without having, with the damage, just the amount of health the final boss has, it's just, I've gotten there once and it, yeah, I ran out of space and it just was not fun. Yeah. I'll say to like think you're doing well and then run out of space. But no, I largely the same, no real major strat differences. I mean, other than having more CC, I think it just makes that opening phase a lot simpler. And that more CC, there are a couple of other areas where you'll use CC. You can sort of extend that. And it's helpful at those points too, just having, you know, two or three options. So yeah.
I've heard of Mistweavers. Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I've heard of Mistweavers leaving the one ghost in the last thing to reach the boss so that they have time to drink because of a weird timing bug where he like immediately engages combat after you heal the last ghost.
Yeah, that was a,
you have no time to drink.
Yeah, that was a strat too in Legion. Yeah, so like, yeah, because those last ghosts become mobs you have to kill. And so technically you have to only heal, there's three waves, you only have to heal 8 ghosts before the next wave triggers. If you let one go through, yeah, then there'll be an animation for when that ghost turns into a mob you have to kill, and it's during that animation time where you don't go into combat. But if you don't have any ghosts, then the boss immediately comes out without that sort of interim animation running. Yeah.
Interesting.
So yeah, there is a thing to do if you want mana. I'll tell you, yeah, I mean, I guess you could use it. There's just not a lot of healing. The funny thing is in the last phase, there's not a lot of healing you need to do, but there's a lot of like healing yourself at the right time you need to do, because you need to basically balance your health. And like, yeah, in that regard, it's like not too bad in terms of like the amount of mana, but or like not needing a ton of mana going into that phase. But yeah, that is a quick way to do it. And of course you have the downtime between phases one, like after you do the first phase with all the waves, you can sit there forever and wait for stuff to come out. And there's also another pause point right before you go and help your allies towards like the second half, where you can pause and definitely wait for cooldown. So the healer one's weird with that, but yeah, it's definitely, I'd say of all the healers, like, so other than Holy Priest, which I think Holy Priest suffers from just having no damage, or not the ability to both heal and do damage. So like they get caught in this area of like, yeah, like balancing. Yeah. I think Mistweaver ends up being probably one of the more difficult healers to do this on, just based on, I mean, Paladin's almost free and Druid's pretty easy. And I only assume Shaman is just as easy with the amount of damage they can do. Because the funny thing is, the more damage you do as a healer in this, the actual better it is, because you shorten everything. Yeah. So weirdly enough, this was the same in Legion. This was never about how much healing you could do as a healer. It was literally always about how much damage you could put out. So, yeah.
How much damage you could put out while keeping everybody alive.
Yeah, exactly. And can you get through like the really dangerous parts quickly? And that way you don't need, you know, healing cooldowns for anything like that. So, yeah. Yeah. It was, I mean, it's been fun so far. It's literally mostly the same as it's been. So yeah, back then.
Yeah. The Brewmaster one, I think Brewmaster went from probably the hardest challenge to the, I don't know, the easiest, maybe this, I think actually probably the second easiest, because Vengeance can still just ignore the knockbacks by pressing spacebar. So that I think makes it easier than Brewmaster's. But Brewmaster gained a lot. Like, the problem in Legion for Brewmaster was the lack of self-sustain. Velen's healing sucks. He's a bad priest. And that meant that you had to heal yourself, except the Brewmaster didn't have anything with which to do that. There's like the Guy Plin's legendary that turned purified stagger damage into healing done to you, except that we didn't take enough stagger damage to really get huge amounts of healing from it. There's Expel Harm, but you couldn't actually cast Expel Harm without orbs, and it didn't have a base heal. So it was just based on like how much damage you took, whether you could heal or not. So you ended up casting Vivify a decent amount in phase one. And it just kind of sucked. This time around, we have Expel Harm, we have Celestial Brew. I feel like Varus actually does less damage relative to your HP than they did in Legion, but I can't remember that because I don't have logs from Legion to compare against. But it just, oh, and then of course, we have Leg Sweep baseline. So we have Leg Sweep plus ROP, or in this case, Leg Sweep plus Black Ox Statue. Black Ox Statue, very good because it picks up the nether adds for you. We have Touch of Death now, which is totally new. We didn't have any equivalent of in Legions. And we also have Invoke Niazhao baseline, which we didn't have, or it was a talent in Legion. So you had to choose between the damage from Rushing Jade Wind and the damage from Invoke Niazhao, with Invoke Niazhao having some like niche side effects that you could convince Cruel to cast Annihilate on Invoke Niazhao instead of on you, and get an extra cast off like that.
And you can purify a ton of Annihilate damage into Invoke damage.
Into Invoke now. Damage, yeah. Which is honestly totally unnecessary because legitimately, you. Like, so you go in, you're going to have about 7 to 8k health.
Mm-hmm.
Cruel has 40k health or something like that. Maybe it's 60k, 40 to 60k, somewhere in that range. I don't remember the exact number. When you start engaging him, which just means that basically 20% of the damage you need to do in that phase comes from Touch of Death. And yeah, it's so huge. Like you so piece of advice for anybody working on this as a brewmaster, do not save Fort Brew to try and do an extra big Touch of Death. It is not worthwhile. Use Fort Brew to eat and annihilate and not die to it. But then you can also, like what I did, I ran Cyclotronic Blast, which is the one piece of old gear that I used because I just had it in my bags. It's very good. If you have the Mechagon rep, you should go grab it. But if you don't, you won't have time to get it before time walking is up. It's not like making it trivial either. It's just a very good trinket compared to a lot of the Shadowlands ones in time walking. But what I did is at the end of it, I used one of Velen's orbs to blind him for 4 seconds. The blind does not break on damage. So you blind him for 4 seconds, you do some damage, and then you leg sweep him, hit Cyclo, and then when the Cyclo finished, I hit Touch of Death. And just did probably 10-15k damage in that like 9 second window and finished him off. It's definitely significantly easier. It took me like 30 to 40 minutes to do, but it's still, I do actually still think it is one of the harder challenges, just because of the knockback stuff. There's no amount of like gear and abilities that will fix the fact that you're just going to get yeeted off the platform a bunch of times.
Yeah, you only have the Transcendence back up there and easily outranged if you're not quick.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was always the thing that when I did all the monk ones back in Legion, but I did everything but Mistweaver like much later, like once. You could walk in and maybe wipe 2 or 3 times, even if you were bad. And the Brewmaster one still took me probably like 7 or 8 wipes just because. And every one of my wipes before I killed it were literally to me forgetting about orbs or like not remembering positioning and just dying to like getting thrown off, right? It's still a tough mechanic to get through.
Yeah, it is still 100% about control more so than damage. Damage is very useful for it. So the amount of time you spend in phase one determines the number of infernals that are active in phase two, and fewer infernals is better. So doing more damage in phase one is good, but like it's doable with 3 infernals. I think I had 2 when I killed it. I know I've seen videos of people doing it with 3. You just like sidestep and move out, and it's fine. You do have to, one piece of advice, you have to be careful when you look at the details or recount or whatever damage breakdown for this, because the infernals take triple damage or quadruple damage, some crazy amount of extra damage. So if you have something like Lightless Force might look like it's doing like your number one damage or something like that, because it hits all 3 infernals a couple times and just does a bajillion damage to the infernals. You got to look at damage done to Varus and damage done to Cruel, because those have regular damage taken. So there's a bunch of people that have come in and asked, like, look at this random Proctyl I have that does so much damage in time walking. And we're like, well, what damage did it, like, what did it do the damage to? And then they look at it, it's like, oh, it did the damage to an infernal.
Yeah.
It's like, that's why.
I remember in Legion, when I did the Brewmaster run at the end of Antorus, you would just you did so much extra damage that you would literally just in one invoke Yu Zhao or whatever, you would go in, he would taunt and tank the Inquisitor or whoever the first guy was in P1, and you could just stand there with 9 stacks and damage him for the whole invoke, and he'd be dead by the end of the invoke, the first invoke that you did. It was much more trivial at the end of Antorus in that regard.
Yeah. But I do think it is the easiest of the tank challenge for Vengeance for the glide reason, but that's about it.
So then how was the Windwalker one? Yeah.
The Windwalker one, I found it to be pretty easy. It only took me one try. I practiced on the PTR, granted, but and had like 5 to 10 tries on there. But it's largely the same. There is a little bit of a difference. There are some that bugs that I reported, like the I guess I'll explain it first. So there's a Tauren named Tugar and a worm called Jormungar or something.
Jormog Behemoth. Yeah.
Jormog the Behemoth. And the worm does sonic screams, and you can interrupt that with stuns and paralysis and stuff. The worm will go underground and be untargetable and then start charging you. Tugar will put down little crosses on the ground that you have to avoid. He'll put an unavoidable magic dot that you could diffuse off on you. So there's a slight self-healing check with all the damage there. There's a Fell Burst that he casts like every 13 to 15 seconds that you have to interrupt on cooldown every time your interrupt's up. He will spawn these stalactites that you want to bait the worm into charging you into those stalactites to remove the worm's armor that reduces his damage taken. There's the Fell Surge Totem Tugar will occasionally put down, which will stun you for 5 seconds if it goes off. And when he summons those stalactites, he'll also summon eggs that spawn worms, and you want to kill those ASAP. I found that there were bugs, like in Legion, that Fell Surge Totem couldn't be killed by AoE, so you had to make like a Crackling Jade Lightning target macro and just like Totem Stomp it that way. But in the current iteration, it's and I reported this on the PTR, it just dies to passive cleave, so it's almost thoughtless. You just go near it and spinning crane kick or aim your Fist of Fury at it or whatever. It's you don't have to even Crackling Jade Lightning. I had to do it a couple times because it was out of range. But the other major change that required you to strategize a little differently is in Legion, when Tugar or Jormog died, the other one got 150% enrage damage dealt. But in the Mage Tower, it's not a static 150, it's a stacking over time enrage. And that's the main difference. So it more or less kind of enforces you to cleave them together, which you can't do right at the start because the worm has 9 stacks of his armor and only takes 10% damage until you remove all 9 stacks. But that was really the only difference. Is in Legion, you could kill one and focus it and not even worry about the worm and just interrupt the sonic scream that the worm did every time and eat one because the enrage was static. But if you kill them too far apart in HP now, you're going to be trying to kill... Usually you're going to kill the Tauren first, but you're going to... If you end up with the worm at like 70% health, you're going to have to chew through a bunch of sonic screams that just get more and more powerful until it one-shots you. So that was the main difference there. You just had to ensure that you cleaved the worm down with Tugar much more closely. But yeah, that was it. There's no DPS check other than ensuring that they die together in the Windwalker one. It's
so fun fact.
There's a slight self-heal check.
Go ahead, sorry. If you let the encounter continue to go on, so initially with the stalactite spawn, he'll spawn 3 or 2 eggs and turn into worms. Then he'll go to 3, then 4. It keeps going.
Oh, okay.
I got those up eggs... to 6 on my hunter at one point.
Those eggs were nothing for a Windwalker. They died to just spinning crane kick without any thought.
Yeah.
So
I started on my hunter trying to like single target them down, and that was just massively inefficient, which is why I ended up with six. And I switched to cleaving them like you're talking about now, and they just die.
Yeah. For Windwalker, actually, if you're running low on healing for some reason, you can let them turn into worms, and then killing the worms drops your healing orbs that you get for killing a mob.
Okay.
So the eggs won't when you kill them, but if you need healing, you can let them turn into worms and kill them and walk through those orbs and basically full heal yourself. But
oh wow,
I never needed that issue. I never needed that. I was able to self-heal just by chi waving on cooldown, and that was enough self-healing to keep me through the whole thing. But other than the eggs, which aren't really a problem for Windwalker, there's no real DPS check. It's just mechanics 24/7 all the time until you kill it, and that's it. And if you could do that, there's no reason to cheese it with gear. There's no, like, as you said on Brewmaster, the faster you kill P1, the less infernals you gotta deal with. There's nothing like that. You just, it's the same fight the entire 100 to 0. Same fight, just kill it and do the mechanics.
Yeah. So I did it on my hunter, so it's the BM Hunter challenges. One thing that struck me there is that, so you mentioned the thing where you want to like cleave them down now. The other thing I noticed is that the fight is actually significantly longer now than I remember it being in Legion. And that meant that, so in Legion, when I did it on my hunter, I actually accidentally failed to remove all 9 stacks. I had like 1 or 2 left on the worm because I just didn't get it through stalactites enough times. So it was taking like 20% reduced damage, and I just, it was fine. I killed it. But with how long the encounter was for my hunter, I haven't tried it on Windwalker yet, so I don't know if this is the same. It was basically impossible for me to not have it remove all 9 stacks.
Yep.
So like I had it, all 9 stacks gone probably halfway through the fight.
Yeah, I was done with stack like the third charge, like the third stalactites, and I had like 4 more after that.
Yeah.
It was a lot longer, and for a fight like that, length is the difficulty because you're executing 100% all the time.
Yeah. I think my kill on my hunter ended up being over 10 minutes long, so I bloodlusted twice.
Oh, man.
It was very slow, but yeah.
That's great. Well, I mean, it sounds like of the three, like Windwalker almost ends up being one of the easier, at least the three monk ones, right? With then Brewmaster and Mistweaver sort of.
I think the Windwalker one, if it's not the easiest, like I think Brewmaster is maybe up there in contention for easiest now. Among the different monk ones. It's probably, I would say, far less frustrating than the Brewmaster one because there's no random rippy, like, oops, you got knocked off the platform. And it was too fast for you to transcend, so you're dead now. The closest thing is like getting hit by a stalactite on the worm one. Like you get hit by a stalactite and it does 90% of your health. And if there's any other incidental damage or you weren't full health, you just die. But that's a bit easier to dodge.
If you miss the Fel Surge Totem, you get stunned. That could easily land into Fel Burst coming up and you miss your interrupt because you're stunned.
Yeah.
That happened once on PTR because of lag. PTR lag.
Nice.
Awesome. Cool. Anything else on Mage Shower?
So I'll throw this out there. I've done one of the other challenges as well, the Sigrun, aka God Queen encounter. It's not a monk one. I did it on Retribution Paladin. And that one also feels like it's, so it's half the length of the worm one. At least it was for me. It was about 5.5 minutes long as opposed to 10.5 minutes. But it's the same kind of like pure mechanics going the whole time. But they did add a hard enrage to it, which wasn't there before. So it's 6.5 minutes. They hard enrage, and if you haven't killed them, you die. nice. Which means that you do actually have to put a lot of effort into making sure you can like efficiently AoE cleave them. So the guides from like Legion era are completely off base because they all recommend that you just like CC one, and focus one down. It was like a very dramatic change to the strategy because of that one switch and the relative tuning level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I think that's come up on a couple of the other challenges too, but I haven't done more than those three right now.
The last comment I had on the Mage Tower is the Monk Transmog is terrible. It's Tony the Tiger. That's all I see.
Tony the Tiger?
No, it's just a weird recolor, and I don't like being Tony the Tiger. I wear it because I earned it and I want to show it off, but not fun to be Tony.
Very
the
orange,
Tiger, in my opinion.
I do actually like it. It doesn't work well on pandas. I will say the set itself. The model of the set does not look good on pandas. It doesn't look good in any of the colors on pandas. There's no way it ever could. But I do actually like the color, and so it's fine. I'm never going to wear it because it looks bad. I mean, I wore it in raid this week because, you know, it was new. But yeah. But then on the other hand, like the Paladin set, I think looks really good. So right now my Paladin has the challenge artifact skin from Legion plus the Mage Tower tier set recolor from this Mage Tower on, and that's just kind of neat.
Awesome. Well, you could be like these two individuals, like Merez or Elpinor 43, who completed all 36 and they have all of their transmogs and mounts. That's crazy.
So much work.
Yeah.
All that prep. We have Coffee Co. in chat. I don't know if they're still in chat. Hi, Coffee Co. They were complaining about being 80 pulls into the Guardian Druid Mage Tower. Definitely harder than the Brewmaster one. That's another one of the cruel encounters. I have no idea anything about that encounter, honestly, because my bear is level 51 and I haven't touched it. I may... Apparently you can go into the Mage Tower on low-level characters.
Open level 50 or above.
Okay. Yeah. So I might go in on my bear and just try and pick the recolored werebear skin, but I have the one from Legion, so yeah. I'm not like too particular about that.
Fair enough.
Hope he goes guilty of mine.
Oh, nice. So I think
the Tiger is a guilty of Anom's.
Who? Oh yeah, Tonius. Oh, Emerson. So the final topic, we only have about 10 more minutes to get through it, so we don't have a ton of time, but we did want to sort of, since we ask, you know, Brew to be here, to talk a little bit about the community council and sort of, I guess, really your initial thoughts on it. I know that, so Blizzard, of course, community council was something they announced, gosh, probably about a couple months or maybe a month or so ago. They were setting up essentially a public forum where different members of the community could come in and basically post things about the game, their thoughts, in a very public and sort of highly moderated section of the forums. This would also be a section where we'd get a lot of like developer and player type interaction in terms of those community council members and developers sort of having conversations somewhat out in the open, somewhat maybe a little bit behind closed doors, but just a general forum that's a little bit more, we'll say, focused from a developer perspective, but also public from a player perspective, at least to read. So Brew, sounds like you applied or did the little application process, got picked, and now you're one of the people shaping the future of all things high level WoW. And now I guess your initial thoughts on sort of number one, like the onboarding. I'd like to learn a little bit more. I mean, the forums are out there, but I guess in terms of maybe what you can and can't talk about, I don't know what they actually had you sign or whatever, but in terms of like how they set up the onboarding process, like was there anything beyond just the like sort of the general community knowledge of what the community forum was, or did they give you guys a little bit more detail about what to do, how to interact, things like that?
They gave us a little bit of guidance. The onboarding process was just more or less they emailed me at the email address I put in on my application, and they said, hey, we picked you, send us your character name, make sure you're logged into them on your forums. You're only in the council on that character, and that was more or less it. They gave us a Discord, but they made it very clear that the Discord is meant to be a place for like meta discussions, and if they want to talk about the game, then go to the forums to do that. And
gotcha.
There have been a couple conversations that have gotten to game talk in that Discord, and like even the council members are in there like, hey, this is a topic for the forums, go put it there. But it's meant as a more of a support thing for us, and a way for us to talk. They also mentioned that they plan, and I think they said something like this in the intro, that they also plan to have some live chats. I think mostly public. They don't really want to do a whole bunch of talking to the council members in private about the game. They want that all to be public. They've made that very clear, but they want to have us, they want to have live chats with us, and they don't know what the forum yet is going to take for that. They don't know. A lot of this is very open-ended, and they want the community to drive a lot of it. They want the community council to drive a lot of it. They want a wide variety of perspectives. Not everybody is going to join the Discord. It's not required. Not everybody is necessarily even going to post an intro in the intro thread. But the people on the council can see the membership on the forum. So we know who all is in it. But it's not something that I believe the player point of view can see that list. So it's up to the people if they want to reveal themselves. We were given the option of any character to pick. So if you wanted to be more anonymous, you could pick a no-name alt. There are problems with that. Like, you could probably backtrack someone through pet collection and whatnot. But and the EU people had to level a level 10 trial account on NA to join.
Oh my gosh.
They couldn't join on their EU characters, so there's no EU for them. Classic is represented there. My opinion, they should have had two separate councils for the games, but I get why they're doing one. Probably another scope thing and not wanting to overextend themselves. That's my guess.
Yeah,
man,
she thinks it once,
But that's kind of where we're at. Most of it, they do plan on posting their topics that they want some direct feedback on. But eventually, they mentioned to us, but they more or less want it to be kind of council-driven and people to discuss things and in a mostly respectful but constructive way. They didn't make me sign anything. Most of this is honor system, and they're just telling us to, you know, they're putting their trust in us. And they very clearly went through applications and looked through people's followings if they were large influencers, if I could speak today, making sure that you're not a dick, more or less. and we didn't
probably why I didn't get picked.
I didn't even apply, so.
So that's kind of where we're at there. I've posted on a couple things. I want to focus more on Mythic Plus and rating, but I have a wide variety of game interests that I have represented that I want to put there.
Okay.
I am definitely not the highest rater on the council. I know I'm not going to out them because they haven't posted publicly, and that's their decision if they want to post publicly or not. But there are some raider, like I earned CE ninth week of the tier this year. There are some that earned it a lot earlier on there. There are some high-end raiders on there.
I've heard some, we'll say like, top five US type people that have gotten in. So the interesting part about the council to me, and this will be something that I think will, like, the interesting thing is that because Blizzard's providing very little direction at this point, I'm concerned that it essentially gives them an out to, like, ignore it, we'll say. Like, and this is sort of me just being kind of a little bit rude. And, like, to be fair, I applied. I think it's a good idea. I think it's a cool thing that they're doing. But leaving it so open-ended essentially just means, like, oh, the players never commented on this, or they, you know, like, it never got the same visibility. And I think just scrolling through, like, I scrolled through last night as I was sort of pulling together notes about this and just looking at the number of topics, like, it also seems like there's just a lot of topics for like the first week of this, right? In terms of like things that people have commented on, things that people like haven't commented on. It's a little all over the place. So I don't know. I think the cool thing is it sounds like they're leaving it pretty much up to the community to sort of like organize, but at the same time, they built the structure for this. So like, I feel like they should have a little bit more, maybe a little bit more of a hand in how it's sort of going. But I mean, yeah, I don't think there's a better way of them doing this. And I think, to be fair, like the, so that's my one comment, I think. And then the other side of it too, is I think a lot of people, particularly in Discords, right, which is where you get a larger representation of like the top half of the player. We'll say that the more hardcore is the wrong word, but the more like involved people, like the more people who have spent more time at like a higher level in the game doing like mythic, you know, CE type branding or even like high level PvP sit. And a lot of times their most of their interaction with Blizzard is on things that dictate that part of the game. And so I saw somebody posted about like player housing, or there was another post too about some like something else that was not focused on like that high end community. And they were like, why are they posting about this? It was very much a like, sort of like, this is stupid. This person like talks about high end PvP, but their character has like no high end PvP knowledge or rating or whatever, right? And like other topics that didn't directly talk about like class balance or systems. And to be fair, like that's not the intent, I think, of this council, is to talk about that stuff. I think the intent is more, I think, to brew your point, a more like holistic view of collecting content from like a bunch of different types of players. Which then feeds into the fact that the forum's all over the place, I think, a little bit in terms of topic.
But I do think they'll provide more direction and in some form, but
yeah,
we're the council, the Blizzard representatives that are on our main contacts, and the community all themselves are going to shape the future of this. They don't really have a set idea of how they want this to be yet. Mm-hmm. That much is very clear, and they've even admitted this to us. And but they do want to eventually provide live chat discussions for some focused live feedback and talking. They want to have their own threads that they'll start and want focused feedback on. They want the ability for the council members to feel free to post about anything as well, though. And it's kind of up to the council to also self-moderate whether or not an idea is, like, not that if an idea has merit or not, but whether or not it's something that, like, the best way to bring it up, and if it's something that has a lot of interest with specific people. A lot of people have been asking, like, hey, like, I've been thinking about making this topic, and I have some preliminary ideas. Can I get some feedback? And that people were doing that in the council before posting the thread about it. There's been a lot of disagreements already. Like, people, one of the guys made a Discord for himself to talk to the community and try to have more feedback for him to get for the council. And that's a little egotistical, my opinion, but I didn't join that. I think that goes against the idea of it being public, and it, not that the Discord's not public, but it's like a separate avenue where we don't have any Blizzard help to moderate us if we have trouble, because that's, they promised to support us in that regard in game and on the forums. I think if you have any discourse, it needs to be on the forums, and we've already had some discourse there. And I think that's what Blizzard wants, is they want healthy discussions. And I think that's a step in the right direction, but it's also like, there are like 16 different forks where it could go, and we don't know which one is going to go down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have a very important question here.
Yeah.
Has anybody brought up the subject of leveling yet?
Not that I know of, other than maybe alts.
Maybe I should have applied. Way.
We should talk about it. I had one guy DM me and ask if I could bring up issues with his. He's having issues that there's no WoW server in his country, and the latency causes him to be unable to do his mage tower. And he asked me to bring that up. I didn't know how to bring it up, and I haven't brought it up yet, but it was something to think about. It's kind of cool getting people to message you and want to be earnest about their experiences.
Yeah. I just can't wait till you say something, Rue, like slightly off. Like, hey, you mentioned a post. You're like, this is a 10% buff. And the community's like, no, it's 8%. And then your DMs are just flooded with people like, you can't add. Like, just, you're bad at math just over and over again. Like, that's that's really when the community forum, I think, is working. Is what? No offense, I feel like there's a whole, this whole like privacy, and if this should have been as public as it should have been, right? Like that side of the discussion. But I'm really excited for the first time, like somebody says something very controversial in the community forums, and like that person is just inundated with like the stupid people in like our community that just are like, guys, it's 8%, not 10%. Like, how did this person make it to the council? This is unacceptable. Blizzard is now, has no idea what's going on. It's ridiculous. Or like, yeah, something like that will occur. And it'll be fun. It'll be funny looking at it from the outside, probably not funny for those going through it, but I will always enjoy when the community like freaks out about the smallest things. Particularly, we do a lot of it on each other, which I don't think is healthy, but it'll be fun when that happens, because like I think that's the biggest scare about this, is the fact that like the characters you guys chose, like there is sort of a public face to this, and a lot of people I think aren't ready for that, like aren't understanding of that, right? Like there's got to be a little bit of a thick skin for these community folks. So
yeah,
it'd be fun to see how that part of it plays out.
It's a voluntary program, and I think most people knew to some degree what they were signing up for. And yeah, anybody who got a late wave invite when the forums were already established, because they definitely haven't, like, people still haven't read their emails, I'm pretty sure, based on the number of people in the forum group of the council. Yeah. There are people who still haven't read their email who got in and don't know yet, or EU who haven't made their trial account, stuff like that. I definitely think that those people at a minimum also know exactly what they're getting into now. And yeah, I am okay with like all that. If it becomes a problem, I'll resign and tell Blizzard like I'm done. But yeah, I don't foresee that being a problem. I have pretty thick skin. I laugh at people who do that kind of stuff to me, honestly. It's not a big deal to me, but I could see how someone might not necessarily be that way.
Yeah. I think you probably have a pretty good grasp on what it entails anyway, being that you've got a colored name in Peak. You already are dealing with some of that, hopefully not as much, but it does happen from time to time. Like, I've definitely had situations where I've, you know, done the foot in mouth moment and got called out by a bunch of random people over a period of like weeks, because for some reason people like scroll back up pages and pages and pages in brew questions, and they will be like, oh yeah, this was wrong, but somehow they didn't read the following four times that I was told that it was wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you got to make sure you remember.
Yeah, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for the opportunities there. I think there's a good chance that this could be good. I could see why it might seem useless, or not seem useless, but seem like it could lead to a road of uselessness.
In
some people's minds, but I'm tentatively hopeful for this.
I think the real test of it will be when we get into new expansion, like beta stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more room for bigger changes and bigger feedback than, 9.2.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is the case where someone made a monk thread on it and they moved it to the PTR forum. And they actually, we had a discussion about this in the Discord, like a meta discussion about whether or not Blizzard should do that. And the Blizzard guys were like, their thinking was, this is feedback on a timer, and we want to, like, 9.2 PTR feedback is on a very real timer, and they wanted it in the place where the designers will most likely see it. And to me, that says they're not going to be looking at the console all day every day. They're going to be setting specific times for it or browsing it in their off time. But it's not everyone has a dedicated slot everywhere for them, and that's planned. It's more like they're going to be there when they want focused discussions, and they're going to peruse it to get general feedback and stuff like that. When they want specific topics touched on, they'll bring it up. But like PTR feedback or beta feedback, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of it eventually gets moved out of council forums and into PTR forums, just because of the way they structure their feedback and the way they spend their time. So it's not like it's inappropriate to have it in the council forum. They said explicitly it's fine. They just thought it was better placed in the PTR feedback, and they moved it there. They said if their forum infrastructure allowed, they'd rather just merge the thread so it's in both places at once. But their forums don't really support that.
Interesting. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. Blizzard doesn't either. Let's be real. They don't know how they feel about that either.
Yeah.
They did it because they thought it was the best way to do it, but there were disagreements on that too.
Yeah, but that brings up the point too, as we get into maybe the next expansion, where all that feedback goes, right? Because then you have the same sort of kind of situation where it's either feedback from the council or is it feedback that goes into like the new systems discussion, or at that point like the beta or PTR discussion. So for the expansion, yeah, that's interesting. But I mean, I think I've said this before too about the council. I think you got to be at least somewhat optimistic this will turn out well, but. A lot of the cynical people that have been around, because I follow a lot of them on Twitter, have been like, this is like the third and fourth time Blizzard has done this in terms of creating a space for player focused feedback, and they've eventually abandoned or moved into something else in terms of using something. So hopefully this one being much more public than the others have been is helpful. And yeah, I mean, I hope to see, the biggest thing that I think that I'd like to see is just that like we get like real Blizzard responses again to things versus just like their post your thoughts in this thread and then 6 months later respond with here's some changes we made, and it's like two lines, right? Like I think the biggest thing to me is a little bit more of a back and forth, or just like not even back and forth, just like if someone posts something about like player housing, like Blizzard asks questions about it, right? Doesn't even comment on like we're gonna do this, or doesn't comment on anything like, hey, this is a good idea. More of just like, okay, understand, but what would you do in these situations? Or what are your thoughts about something like this, right? Just to sort of show their reading and, taking a look at it as all. So
to that end, they did say, and I think they mentioned this in the video, but they've also reiterated to us, they want not just developers of Blizzard in these forums looking at them and talking. They want environmental artists. They want encounter designers, they want engineers, they want all those people to feel free to browse the community forum and talk and with the community council and all that stuff, not just game designers, not just like QA looking for bugs or designers looking for specific feedback in their feedback posts, or they want all different Blizzard workers of any kind all along the game development stack to be able to come in and have these discussions with the council on more than just gameplay, more than just raid encounters, more than just PvP encounters. They want all different walks of experience of both Blizzard and the community to be able to have community council to have these discussions. And they made it seem like it's not just going to be filtered PR through like Kyvax or Bornak talking on behalf of other developers. They want the actual developers to come in and be able to talk to the council.
That's cool. That'll be fun.
Cool. Well, awesome. Hopefully that turns out well.
I hope so.
The launch of it is kind of awkward timing with like Christmas coming up and the PTR being like, I guess actually the timing with respect to PTR is pretty okay. Because the PTR just came up, but yeah. Cool. We are running a little bit over time, so I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode, unless there's anything more that either of you want to touch on.
I'm good.
No.
Cool.
The only thing I want to say is if anybody has something that they want to talk about in the council, my DMs are always open. I may or may not agree, and we can have a discussion, whatever. But if you want to talk about something like that guy who sent me his issues with the Mage Tower latency and whatever, if I can help, I'm glad to.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. I don't know whether I should put your Discord tag in the show notes. I don't think I'm going to do that. I'll put your name will be in the show notes. So people can find you on Discord with that. I feel like putting your Discord tag in there is maybe a step too far.
Yeah.
But that's it for the show today. Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, or any of the other work that we put into Pico Serenity in the Discord or on the website, you can support this by going to our Patreon at patreon.com/PicoSerenity. And of course, we encourage everybody, patrons or not, to come and join the Discord. The lounge channels are a great place to be. There's a lot of great information. Questions channels are active and get a lot of quick answers. So generally a good place to be. Also, there's people like Counselor Brewstep in this Discord. Brewmasters actually have a counselor too. Dalf got in, which he's not staff in Peak. I don't know if we're gonna do anything with like a counselor role or something, but he's just a regular user. He hangs out in the Brewmaster channels. I think he actually plays Holy Paladin right now though.
I think Being a regular user is the point of the council.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all for the show today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, guys. Bye.